Thank you for your introduction. Thank you for, the shameless plug for Engraving Heavenly Truths. That is something that we have believed in for a long time, since long before we took it over, and we do want to see it continue to grow and flourish. Appreciate that very much. Also, I want to extend gratitude to the elders and the congregation here. It is an extreme honor to be able to be with you again this year. Appreciate so much the invitation. I also want to say how much I appreciate whoever the poor soul was that had to proofread my manuscript. Because as I was studying again to prepare for this sermon today, I was going through the manuscript, which had been turned in 6, 8, 10 months ago, and I noticed I evidently didn't know how to spell Joseph's name, because everywhere that I came across it, I had either Joseph or Jospe, one of the two. And I read back through that manuscript in the book, and I noticed that somebody painstakingly fixed all of those. And I used that to segue into our study this morning, because a lot of times we not the authors of our own demise? Think about it. We find ourselves in situations and it feels like the world is caving in on us. But what put us there? Usually we put ourselves there, didn't we? It doesn't matter whether it's a financial issue, whether it's an issue within your marriage, an issue within your home, an issue within your work, but it doesn't matter. Typically, when we find ourselves in a pit of demise, we put ourselves there. Whether it be by one small choice that influenced a number of outcomes to go the direction that it did, it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is, it usually centers around us. Well, in a way, that's where Joseph finds himself in chapter 40. Coming into the end of chapter 39, and Brother Ortiz did a tremendous job of breaking down that chapter. Coming into chapter 39, we have been introduced to a young man that we saw his birth. We saw him as a teenager. And as a teenager, we saw an individual who began to be given information through some of these dreams. And in that information, he didn't seem to have the maturity to, you know, kind of keep his mouth shut. And he began to tell his brothers and his parents about these dreams that he had. Y'all going to bow down to me one of these days? And, well, it didn't work out so well. And Joseph actually found himself in a pit for reasons such as that. Well, when we get into chapter 40, we now are beginning to see the molding of a man's moral fiber. We're seeing his character begin to grow. We're seeing a man who, with his family, stood out as someone. If you could imagine the vantage point of his brothers looking at him, they saw an obscure individual. They saw one who tried to show them up. So they were going to show him up. Now, as he is in Egypt, we see this same individual as one who is standing out. And as he continues to grow and continues to mature, you've got to understand, 17 years old when he was thrown into that pit and sold into slavery. 17 years old. How many of us at 17 years old would have had the common sense to come in out of the rain? So don't chastise Joseph for the things that he did and the choices he made. Rather, look at his life and his character and his molding in a fashion in which we can look at our own lives and mold ourselves. In Potiphar's house, as mentioned a moment ago, we saw him be elevated unto a position of most authority. And when he found himself in the pits of demise again, and this time it not being anything of his own doing, but his own doing in a way brought him to Egypt, did it not? When he found himself in the pit of demise again, he is uplifted into a position of authority of some sort. Now, when you begin to study, commentators really vary on what this position of authority was, especially when you consider chapter 40 and verse 4 and notice that the keeper of the guard told him to serve those two individual prisoners. There's arguments and discussions as to whether or not this individual and the authority that was given to him was more of a servant's vantage point rather than someone who was in charge of goings on. But here's the key. Folks, if Kyle and Leach are correct in their assessment of the culture of the time, Potiphar was the executioner of the area. Because the prisons were butted up against the house of the executioner. Potiphar cast him into the prison, and if you notice really quickly in chapter 40 and verse 9 and 10, the chief butler, when he spoke to Pharaoh, said, "I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with the servants, he put me in custody," watch this, "in the house of the captain of the guard." That's the same prison. The prison that would have been up against Pharaoh's house, or Potiphar's house, rather. Potiphar, therefore, being the executioner. Huh. That's something to consider. So here's Joseph. He's found himself now, as was pointed out a moment ago in Psalm 105, 17 through 20, the situation in which Joseph found himself with his feet bound in fetters and being injured in his prison. He finds himself in some sort of an exalted position, whatever that position is. Whether it's a position of authority and charge of goings on within that prison, or it is merely the position of a servant serving other prisoners. He had responsibilities in that prison, something the other prisoners did not have. What I want us to notice here, and I've titled our sermon this way. Here's the thing. Y'all, I wrote this manuscript, was written about, again, 6, 8, 10 months ago, somewhere in that area. So studying back through this, other ideas come to mind. And in the process of studying back through this material, I saw a man who had a pitfall that resulted in perfection. And I see a man who is being molded. He's not ready yet. At 17 years old, the dreams are being revealed to him that somewhere down the line, there's going to be some things that are different in his life. And oh boy, did things turn out different. But things are being revealed to him at such a young age, and his maturity and his moral fiber is not there yet. However much time passed between that time and the time that he came into Potiphar's house, his moral fiber began to grow. And he began to gain this respect and this appreciation for God and doing things that are righteous, and that cast him into this pit. And into the pit we go. Here's one thing I want us to learn. The lessons learned we're going to see throughout the points of this discussion today, and that first one being our perception. Oftentimes, brethren, do we not find ourselves in situations and we look at that situation and we say, "Man, this is the worst thing that can possibly happen to me. How did I wind up here? And how am I going to get out?" You notice the common thread that's the problem there? Right here. I. How did I get here? How am I going to get out? You see, Joseph seems to have his mind focused on the one who would bring him out. I want you to notice some things that are brought out in this chapter. In Joseph's perception, okay, here he is, sold into slavery, comes into slavery, he's exalted into a great position. Next thing you know, he's put in prison, he's in an exalted position in that prison, and now he's got two officers of the king's court that he's going to be put in charge of. And his charge, as you see in verse 4, is to serve them. Now I want us to look at just a moment, this being the butler and the baker. Notice chapter 40, verse 1. "It came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord." Now, a number of commentators, as you study through this, will surmise that evidently there might have potentially, and notice, might have potentially, you find that all in the works that are out there, might have potentially been a conspiracy theory that someone was undermining the Pharaoh. When it come to him in the form of a rumor, and that it was either one of the butler or one the baker, because see, how easy would it have been to poison a king through his food or his drink? You see, when the rumor comes, "Hey, they're trying to kill you, they're trying to poison you," what's the easiest way to do that? Through food or drink. Let me get rid of the two men in charge of that. Until I can find out better which one is guilty and make sure that punishment is passed likewise. "As it came to pass, these two individuals, they offended their king, and Pharaoh was angry with these officers, and he had them put into custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined." Same place, same prison, evidently right next to Potiphar's house. What's Joseph's perception? Let me ask you, let's rearrange this a little bit. What would your perception have been to be where Joseph is? Now, keep in mind, he didn't have the luxury of looking at these words in the text to see what was going to occur. He was living this as it happened. So where was his mind? Where would your mind be? I've been trying to do what God wants me to do, and it's doing nothing but getting me in trouble. It's doing nothing but getting me put into the prison. Let me point something out to you, folks. Have you noticed the situation of our nation today? It may very well be in the very near future that if you're going to take a stand for truth, you may be getting your ankles put in fetters as well. So we best be prepared. What's our perception? Would it be as Paul and him being grateful that he was put into stocks and chains on the behalf of Christ? Would that be your perception? What was his perception? He was in the pit. Brother, one thing that I found to be an ironic situation here is that as I studied through these two chapters, I noticed some numerical breakdowns. And I want you to notice them as we go to. In this perception, two men are introduced, the butler and the baker. These two men bring with them two dreams. Notice verse 5, the butler and the baker, the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison. They had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came into them in the morning and looked, and he saw that they were sad. Have you ever had a dream at night in which you woke up the next morning and you were just devastated at the thought of what occurred? Maybe in this dream, you had a dream that some family member passed away tragically. And you woke up and that was on your mind and you just couldn't get it off your mind. Whatever when Joseph walks in, he can see the looks on these men's faces, and it was in such a state that it's almost presented as though when he walks by to serve them, he sees them and it takes him aback. Notice what he says. Why do you look so sad today? Is it not obvious sometimes when we're around individuals who are sad and upset? Have you ever taken the time to stop them and say, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What can I help you with?" Well, that's where Joseph is with these two with whom he's been charged to serve. These two dreams that each of these men had would be turned into two stories, verses 8 through 19. He said to them, "We have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." Here's the thing. It would seem that from the time these men had these dreams and they awoke, from that time until Joseph showed up, that they were talking about it. And they were telling everybody else around them about it. And they were trying to find someone that would help them understand it. Notice what he says. Notice his perception. Do not the interpretations belong to God? Did Joseph say, "Hey, y'all tell me, I can figure this out for you. I'm a very smart guy. I know what dreams mean. I can figure that out." I want you to think about dreams. From time to time, we dream constantly. When we are at rest, our minds dream. There are oftentimes these obscure, abstract scenes that go through our mind. How often do we remember the details of those dreams? How often can we recall the abstract images that have appeared in our minds while we were at rest? You see, these dreams took an effect on these men. But Joseph said, "Tell them to me. God will reveal the answer to you." And then they describe these dreams. The chief butler, he's the first one to speak up. Now remember the potential for there being a conspiracy against the king. The chief butler is the first one to speak up. And he says, "Look, I saw a dream, and in my dream there were three vines. On those vines were blossoms. Those blossoms turned into clusters of grapes. I took those grapes, I squeezed them into the cup, and I put the cup in the king's hand." What's Joseph's reply? Beginning of verse 12, he said, "Those three branches, they're 3 days." He says, "You see this sadness that you have upon you right now? The king's going to lift up your head at the end of those 3 days. He's going to put you back into the place in which you were taken out of. And when he puts you back into that place, you are again going to put the cup in the king's hand." I want you to notice something that's in and of itself of vital importance in understanding these two dreams. Because then as he's interpreting this dream, when he gets to the end of this interpretation, he makes a request of the butler. He says, "At the end of those 3 days, do me a favor. He says, I'm helping you. The next 3 days, you're going to be almost elated in this prison for the next 3 days because you know what's coming. Do me a favor. When you get out, remember me. That's all he asked for. Just remember me. Remember me to the Pharaoh. Mention me. Help me get out of here the same way as you're getting out of here. But I also want you to notice the butler never agreed to it. And we also see that the butler didn't do it for a span of 2 years. And then, as he is going through in verses 14 through 15 and expressing how he was stolen away and he's not even supposed to be in this prison to begin with, but here he is, then it's almost as if the chief baker interrupts. Oh man, that's a good interpretation. Hold on, let me tell you my dream. He says, in my dream, there was 3 white baskets. I was carrying them on my head, and in the top basket were all manner of baked goods. And, I can only imagine that he heard the interpretation of the butler's dream, and he said, they're thinking, man, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. He said, and then the birds came, and the birds ate everything that was in that basket. I can almost see the depression on Joseph's face. As he begins this interpretation, he says, yeah, those 3 baskets are the same 3 days. At the end of those 3 days, the king's going to lift off your head. Notice he didn't say he's going to lift up his head and place him back in his position. He said the king's going to lift off your head. The birds are going to eat the flesh from your bones. Interestingly enough, at the end of that 3 days, it was time for the Pharaoh's birthday party. And in the throes of this birthday party, can you imagine a Pharaoh wanting to throw a party and not having his cupbearer there? Not having his baker there? But his butler, he restores to his position, takes the cup from his hand. His baker, he hangs on a tree. And the birds pick the flesh from his bones. And then, why is it that it seems that sometimes when we are in the throes of demise, we can remember everyone who's ever helped us and we begin to reach out to those individuals saying, hey, can you help me again? Can you help me again? Can you help me again? Only to find ourselves uplifted out of that pit and to forget about the ones that brought us out. And that's where the butler is. He is presented here as an ungrateful individual. And he forgot about him. You see, there were 2 results, verses 20 through 22, and one forgot. I found it to be an interesting coincidence as I was studying through here that there were 2 men, there were 2 dreams, there were 2 stories, there were 2 results, and one forgot. One forgot. Brethren, I'm not saying that number has anything to do with anything represented in this passage. I'm saying it's an interesting coincidence. Because Joseph was left in the prison. He wasn't ready yet. His preparation hadn't been complete. He was left there for another 2 years. If you notice in chapter 41, as we look at the patience of Joseph beginning, that when that one forgot, leading into chapter 41, that he's going to begin to be perfected at this point. If you'll notice the perception that Joseph had, coming into the time of leading into him having this extreme patience. Now, it had to have been an immense amount of patience that Joseph would have while he remained in that prison for another 2 years. What was he doing? He was doing what God had him do. And somehow he knew this. He seemed to know that he was carrying out God's will. While he was in Potiphar's house, while he was in that prison, he seemed to know this. Can you imagine yourself in that same position? What would your patience be like? Would it be tested to its extreme? God, I have done everything you've asked me to do. Why am I still here? Have you ask yourself that same question from time to time. I know y'all, as a preacher, we ask ourselves that question a lot. You get involved with local work, the members begin to become a part of your life, and you begin to become a part of the members' lives, and the next thing you know, you can't seem to get those members to see past the extension of their own hand to the things that are important about spreading the gospel. It gets to the point where it wears you down, it breaks you down, and you begin asking God, why did you bring me here? What am I supposed to accomplish? Is it time for me to move on? Have I done all that I can? Brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. You think this was a massive trial for Joseph? Here he has done what God asked him to do. He's watched the results of his work, of his interpretation. He has watched the results of it walk out of this prison free and clear. And he's still stuck here. Y'all, let's get an idea of what these prisons were like. Often they were the emptied cisterns. They were not pleasant places to be. It was not like going to some of the prisons of modern day and seeing 50-inch TVs laid out into the public room and weight bench presses for people to exercise on. No. These were places of torture and torment. These were places that were meant to leave an impression on that individual to the such an extent that if he was to get out, there is no way in the world he's ever going back there again. That's where Joseph is stuck at. I can only imagine that. Now, we're not told that he had any thoughts, that he said anything of this nature, but imagine, this man is a human. He is a man like you and I. Would you have had those thoughts? God, what are you doing to me? Why am I still here? Count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. Now notice, let patience have her perfect work. Y'all, it was having its perfect work with Joseph. He was not ready. Had his moral fibers grown and strengthened? Yes. Had his fortitude grown and strengthened? Yes. Had his courage grown and strengthened? Yes. But his patience had to continue to allow him to persevere, point number three, and lesson number three, to persevere to carry out God's will. Because see, in that perseverance, he's going to be faced with two more dreams. And in that perseverance, there were two more dreams in chapter 41, verses 1 through 7, in which the Pharaoh began to have two dreams. Now, I want you to think about this. It said, in his dream, he dreamed he was seeing the river. That's the Nile River, y'all. He was dreaming he was seeing the Nile River, and up out of that Nile came seven, I'm just going to say it, fat and healthy cows. Y'all, the Nile River in the mind of the Egyptian, that was the heart of the country. Everything they knew revolved around that river and the way in which the sediments came out of that river and enriching the soils in that land so that they could have all kinds of produce, so that their livestock could be cared for. They looked upon the cow as a representation and a deity of sorts that would express their understanding of how nature is making the provision for them, how the things that sustain them and keep them alive come out of this natural world represented by those cows. And then here is the Pharaoh. All he understands is abundance. That's all he knows. Where do these seven ugly beasts come from? Seven skinny and malnourished cows. And they come out and devour the seven healthy. Y'all, this was such a shock to his senses. I got to ask you something. Have you ever had a dream and in the middle of the night, whatever was going on in that dream, it shocked you to the extent that you'd almost jump out of bed? Y'all, I do that quite a bit. If I fall asleep in a chair, there's been times I had to catch myself before I hit the floor. I'm going to tell a story, and I hope my wife doesn't beat me up after this. Somebody say, uh-oh. No, that wasn't a request. Somebody said it. I remember having a dream in the middle of the night one night. I had a dream a dog was jumping up on me and wouldn't get down. And I reached over there and slapped that dog. Only I didn't slap the dog. I woke up about the time my hand met her leg, and she hollered, and the first words out of my mouth, it was the dog, the dog. Folks, we have dreams that shock our senses. That's what happened to the Pharaoh. He had a dream that shocked his senses. Oh, don't worry, I got another one for you in a minute. This dream shocked him awake, but it wasn't enough to keep him awake because he went right back to sleep. Then he had the dream about the seven healthy ears and the seven lean ears and the seven lean devouring the seven healthy, and it shocked him awake again. The way in which the text is written, if you notice in verse 8, now it came to pass in the morning, it's almost as though he laid awake the rest of the night worrying about this. It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men. You know, Josh, Brother Ortiz mentioned this a moment ago and kind of alluded to the fact of when you see something written more than once, you need to pay attention to it, right? Y'all, this statement is made no less than three times in this chapter. Notice what he says. He says, all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men and the Pharaoh told them, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. No one could do it. Why? Because back to our numeric value, there was zero ability among men. Zero. So he's had two dreams with zero ability. Huh. Now the butler's going to remember his failure. And he's going to tell one story. There's discussion as to why, what influenced the butler to recall this. Was it simply that he was so elated being put back into his position that it slipped his mind what Joseph had done for him? Or is it the possibility that now he might benefit from this remembrance? Oh, watch in this one story, verse 9 through 13, the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh saying, I remember my faults this day. Can you imagine saying that to the king? You're going to walk up, you're going to be standing there beside his throne with your cup in your hand, with his cup in your hand rather. And while that cup's in your hand, the Pharaoh's talking about that dream and you're trying to help soothe the troubled mind. Sir, I forgot about something. It almost makes me think of that story where somebody's trying to, one of these little kids trying to tell a story and he's trying to stay out of trouble and he just kind of turns around, his head down and kicks the rock on the ground. I forgot about something. He said, you remember when the Pharaoh put me and the baker in custody? He said, me and the baker, we had a dream, both of us, one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream, but there was a young man. There was a Hebrew. There was a Hebrew man who was there with us. He was a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him and he interpreted our dreams, each of us, according to his own dream. And it came to pass exactly what he told us is what occurred. He restored me to my office and him he hanged. Now I want you to notice Joseph's perception has turned to patience. His patience has developed into perseverance. And now his perseverance is going to bring him posture. Folks, we need to pay attention to posture. I want you to notice his posture. Was his posture within himself? No. Because one man, remember, two dreams, zero ability, one story, one man, verses 14 through 15, the Pharaoh called for him and brought him out quickly. And I want you to notice, you think Joseph was in the lap of luxury in the prison? Watch this. They had to shave his face, they had to shave his head, and had to change his clothes before he could appear before the king. You know what that means? That means his hair grew out, his beard grew out, and he was existing in rags. That's what prison life was like. But you can't appear before the king that way. It would be similar to thinking about someone going to a court appearance. You know, I'm not going to go, if I was being charged with a heinous crime, and I'm having to defend myself in court, I'm not going to show up in court wearing basketball shorts, holy shoes, and a T-top. Am I? No. I'm going to present myself professional. One, because of the respect of the court, right? Brethren, because of the respect of the presence of the king, Joseph had to be made presentable. That shaven face and shaven head was something very, very, very respected among the Egyptians. And they had to change his clothes. And they came to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Joseph, I've had a dream." He said, "There's no one here who can interpret it." That's the second time. "No one here. I've heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it." You know, when we think about this idea of interpreting dreams, there's people, psychologists everywhere, say, "I can interpret a dream." You can't interpret a dream. You know that dream I told you about a moment ago? I can interpret that dream for you. You know what that dream means? That dream means I had a dream about a dog jumping on me. I tried to knock him off. Remember I told you I had another one? We hadn't been married too awful long. She was working at a grocery store. She had a dream one night that a display of soda pops was falling over. I can't believe I'm from Texas and I said soda pop. Something wrong, y'all. Anyway, she had a dream that this drink display was falling over, and she was playing Uzzah in that dream. She reached over to catch it like you could really catch a display, right? She reached over to catch it, and they say, "You know, that elbow was laid right across my eyeballs." Y'all, and Uzzah got struck. That night, I got struck. I want you to notice this. A lot of individuals say they can interpret dreams, but that's utter nonsense. The only one that can interpret a dream is God. That's it. No one else. And you know what? Joseph understood that. Because this is the second time he made the same declaration. Joseph said to the Pharaoh, notice verses 16 through 32. Remember, we've seen two dreams, zero ability, one story, one man, now one truth. Joseph said, "It is not in me." Y'all, how easy would it have been for Joseph to stand there before the Pharaoh of Egypt and say, "Yeah, I can interpret that for you. I've been interpreting dreams my whole life. I can do that." And if he had been able to interpret that dream, you think the Pharaoh would have believed him? He didn't believe the magicians. I can only imagine the magicians and all the priests. Y'all, the magicians were the priests in Egypt at the time. We need to understand that. All those deities, priests that were flooding Egypt, they could not give an interpretation to this dream that the Pharaoh said, "Okay, yeah, I agree with that." No. I can only imagine how many stories he heard. He said, "No one can give me an interpretation of it." Joseph said, "God can. It is not in me." And I want you to key into that phrase. I think that is the key to Joseph's character. It is not in me. Brother, I think in his posture, we need to understand that. We got far too many preachers right now who do not have the backbone to stand up with the posture in the pulpit and preach the truth. Joseph stood before the one who could take his life. He said, "King, it's not in me. It's not about me. God will give Pharaoh the answer of peace." And notice, Pharaoh rehearses this dream to him. He tells him the same dream over again. Tells him about the river and the seven cows and the 7 ears. And again he repeats in verse 24, "So I told this to the magicians, was no one who could explain it to me. I can only imagine at this point the Pharaoh was thinking, here's this little Hebrew boy standing in front of me. He's going to be able to tell me what this means? Yeah, right. And Joseph opens his mouth. Verse 25, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. So Pharaoh, look, you had two dreams, but they mean the same thing. What do they mean? They mean that God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. I can only imagine that, Pharaoh, you're a lucky man. Now, I don't think Joseph said this, but that had to be going through his mind. You're a lucky man. God's about to show you what's coming. This is what he's about to do. Those seven good cows, those seven good heads, they're 7 years. Look, the dreams are one. And the seven thin and the ugly cows which came up after them, the 7 years and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind, are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I've spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. You know, I love listening to audios of Brother Marshall Keeble. When it comes to sermons, he said, this is how you preach it. He said, you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and you tell them what you told them. Now, that's the basic outline of a sermon. Notice what Joseph did. He says, I'm going to tell you what God's going to do. This is what he's going to do. And I'm going to tell you, that's what he said he's going to do. So you better get ready. And how do you get ready? With one advice. Notice, we've had two dreams, zero ability, one story, one man, one truth, one advice. What's the advice? You find a wise man. You find a wise man to take over control of all of this, put him in charge of all the land of Egypt, and let him take up one-fifth of the food for those seven plenteous years. Pharaoh says, where in the world are we going to find a man like that? I can imagine all of his officers and magicians are standing around. Me, pick me. He said, Joseph, it's going to be you. One man moves from perseverance to posture. Watch this. To prosperity. Joseph, it's going to be you. This one man receives one promotion. And that promotion to being the second in command in the land of Egypt. Here is a Hebrew in charge of everyone in the land of Egypt, with the exception of the Pharaoh himself. You want to know what lessons we learn from this? The final point, remember, Joseph is being perfected. He's being perfected. The final point, fulfilling God's glory. What did Joseph do? He fulfilled God's glory. Notice verse 46. He was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh the king. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. He collected one-fifth of everything, and by the time he got done, he couldn't even count it. Does that tell you the type of abundance that Egypt experienced? He collected one-fifth of the bounty, and there was so much that he couldn't keep count of it all. When the time came, and some individuals came to the Pharaoh seeking help, Joseph was the one to whom they were directed. You want to know what a couple of lessons we can learn from this are? One, you notice one thing about Joseph? The Bible, if it's not anything else, it's an honest document. It tells what happened to everyone and that everyone did in truth. But that entire scene of Joseph in 30 and 40 and 41, I don't see anywhere that Joseph complained. He didn't complain. He also expressed the character of God, character of Job, rather. Remember Job chapter 1, the end of the chapter right there? It says, Job did not sin against God with his lips. He did not charge God. Neither did Joseph, at least in the recording that we have. Brethren, may it be that we can have the character of Joseph, because I think the song that we sang as we got started with this lesson fits perfectly. I think Joseph had his eyes on the prize. Onward rejoicing, I tread life's way. Higher I'm climbing each passing day. Hilltops of glory now rise in view, where all things will be made new. want you to remember this. The footsteps of Jesus that before us lead. We tread life's journey and His warnings we heed. Evil allurements, oh boy, is that Joseph, cannot prevail. Let's all be together on the upward trail.